Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC will dig deeper into those AIG developments coming up in a little while. But one of the issues in the presidential race has been whether the U.S. should invade the Pakistani mountains without that government's permission to go after al-Qaeda leaders if Pakistan won't get them itself. Barack Obama, you may remember, was the first to say the U.S. could, for which Hillary Clinton accused him of naivete in an early debate. Since then, the Bush administration has actually done exactly that several times, most recently just a few days ago, that incident where 20 civilians were killed. U.S. forces admit they struck the wrong target. And just this morning, there's a story coming across the AP wire that says Pakistan has ordered its forces to open fire if U.S. troops launch another air or ground raid across the Afghan border. That's being attributed to a Pakistani army spokesman. So instead of fighting with us, they may soon be fighting against us. But the change of government in Pakistan this summer raises many questions for Pakistanis and Americans alike. Are Musharraf's demise and the election of Asif Ali Zardari, Benazir Bhutto's widower, good for democracy, good for America, good for Islam? Is the government there making alliances with the fighters in the mountains, threatening Afghanistan and potentially the United States? Well, my first guest this hour is the Pakistan-born British writer and filmmaker Tariq Ali. Born to a family once big in Punjabi politics, he is a longtime anti-war activist and critic of U.S. foreign policy. Maybe you know his last book, The Clash of Fundamentalisms, for which he was on the show. He writes for The Nation and The Guardian, among other things, and has a new book called The Duel, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power, published by Scribner. Tariq Ali, welcome back to WNYC.
Very good to be with you.
Now, before we get to today's development, you wrote an op-ed in the L.A. Times this summer saying Pakistan after Musharraf has gone from a moth-eaten dictatorship to a moth-eaten democracy. What is a moth-eaten democracy?
A moth-eaten democracy is a democracy where the person leading the country's largest political party has gained his position not through political experience or the respect of the people, but simply because he was married to the former leader who was tragically assassinated and who bequeathed the party to her son and decreed that her husband act as the regent while the son comes of age. Now, that for me is a moth-eaten democracy.
Now, where that's how he got the nomination, in effect, though he then won the election.
He won the election on the strength of her assassination. There was a big sympathy vote, and he's now been elected president indirectly. If there were direct elections in Pakistan, he would never be elected president. He's been elected indirectly by parliament.
You believe, theme of your book, the United States, in tandem with the Pakistani military, is calling the shots in Pakistan now, including that the U.S. decided to let Musharraf go. The U.S. decided, rather than anything more indigenous forcing him out of power. How far do you go in arguing that the U.S. is in charge?
Well, I don't think it is completely in charge, but I think the influence of the United States on the Pakistani military is very strong, and on these non-military elites who run the country. This has been so for over the last half century, if not more, and I provide chapter and verse in my book. As far as Musharraf's removal is concerned, there were contradictory demands made by the United States. Initially, the State Department said they didn't want Musharraf to go till Bush left the White House. They wanted him to stay there and go, or the Pakistanis could get rid of him after Bush had left. Then something unusual happened.
Now, let me linger on that for a second. Okay. Was that a case of choosing stability over democracy?
It was a question partially of choosing continuity over venturing into the unknown, and Musharraf was known as a very close ally of Bush, so they thought it might embarrass the occupant of the White House. Then what happened is a behind the scenes, Cheney's office orchestrated, essentially, through Khalizad, the U.S. representative at the Security Council, who began to advise Zardari behind the scenes, unknown to the State Department, what he should be doing to get rid of Musharraf. And when this came out, Richard Boucher at the State Department really freaked out, sent an angry email to Khalizad, saying, what were you advising Zardari? Were these personal discussions? Were these official discussions? What were you up to? So clearly there was not unanimity in the U.S. Political establishment about removing Musharraf, but Khalizad and Cheney outflanked the State Department.
Why did they want him out if the State Department was going for the continuity?
I think because Khalizad is very strongly committed to his protege in Kabul, Hamid Karzai, and Musharraf and Hamid Karzai didn't get on at all. It was no secret that they loathed each other. And Khalizad is always on the lookout for Hamid Karzai-type politicians. And in Zardari, he found a perfect match.
I was looking before this story broke this morning about the Pakistan government ordering troops to open fire if the U.S. crosses the border again. I was looking at the headlines around the world about Pakistan, knowing you were coming. And here were the things that were most prominent on Google News. The Scotsman, 32 militants killed in Pakistan. AP, Pakistan official says 8 killed in Taliban stronghold. The Daily Star of Lebanon, this is where it gets meaty, whose side is Pakistan on in fighting the Taliban? Asia Times Online, U.S. forces the terror issue with Pakistan. International Herald Tribune, warts and all, a new partner in Pakistan. So the whole thrust of the news coverage has to do with tension between the U.S. and Pakistan over how tough that they are going to be on the militants in the mountains near the Afghanistan border. And now comes this story where rather than Pakistan standing up and saying, okay, yes, you don't have to come and fight them. We're going to fight them because they're really our problem. They say, no, no, if you come across the border, we're going to fire on you, United States. What do you make of this?
Well, it shows very severe tensions now between the Pakistani military and the decision taken by the United States and made public, which is that President Bush had authorized U.S. troops to cross the border without informing the Pakistanis as early as July. So very few countries in that part of the world can afford to be seen to totally caving into U.S. pressure like this. And so the new chief of staff of the army, General Kiani, said that if there was a direct incursion by U.S. troops, it would be resisted. And when he was asked, well, what about when they sometimes bomb from the air? He said, well, that we can't deal with that. I mean, we don't have the equipment, but we will not allow any U.S. troops into our territory from the Afghanistan side. Yesterday, the news was that a U.S. helicopter landed near the Pak-Afghan border with U.S. soldiers who were about to cross over and Pakistani troops opened fire. Now, this has been denied, but it has the ring of truth about it. And both sides usually deny stuff which they don't want to admit.
Right. And this is only being attributed to an anonymous. Well, let's see if it's anonymous, because this is brand new. Well, it's Major General Attar Abbas told the Associated Press that after U.S. helicopters ferried troops into a militant stronghold in the South Waziristan tribal region, the military told field commanders to prevent any similar acts. The orders are clear, Abbas said in an interview. Quote, in case it happens again in this form, that there is a very significant detection, which is very definite, no ambiguity, across the border, on ground, or in the air, open fire, unquote.
Well, this is a new order, and it shows very strong differences now emerging. And some of us predicted that this would be the case if the United States decided to push the military and saying we're coming in whenever we want to. This has been a debate going on in the U.S. political military establishment well over a year. Should we strike across the border or shouldn't we? Now they've decided to do it. They have to face the consequences in Pakistan. And the big threat here is that the unity of the Pakistani military high command, which has held through thick and thin for the last 60 years, could break up. And this is what is worrying the army, that there are people inside the military at junior level saying we can't tolerate this attack on our sovereignty.
We can take some phone calls for Tariq Ali. His new book is called The Duel, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power, flight path being even more literally true here in this story today than it might have been when this book went to press. The Duel, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power. Tariq Ali, 212-433-WNYC. Any Pakistani listeners right now want to call in? Pakistani Americans, you've been here in the past. Call up and talk to Tariq Ali or give us your take on what this development is all about. Depending on where this goes, this could supplant Lehman Brothers on the front pages any time now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. In that Asia Times story from today that I mentioned, it said, and this may be relevant to what's going on here, there may be, you know, more going on behind the scenes than meets the eye with this public threat. The Asia Times analysis says Musharraf in the U.S. apparently had a deal with the United States unofficially allowed to conduct raids across the border, but that now the U.S. and the Zardari government are feeling pressure to declare themselves in the open. So either the U.S. is allowed or not allowed. I guess the U.S. was the U.S. pushing, as far as you know, for a formal declaration that they were allowed to come across?
I think they were pushing behind the scenes, and there was a big scandal several months ago when the Pakistani press published a memorandum of demands from the U.S. military to the Pakistani Ministry of Defense, which did demand the right to enter and leave at will, which was turned down. But now it's all out in the open. You can't just have a nod and a wink situation. Yeah, you do it, we'll deny it, and we'll sort it all out. It has to be made very clear whether the government is for it or against it. And if it is against it, which the military certainly seems to be, then the U.S. is going to run into more problems.
Could there be a nod and a wink going on where they say this publicly in Pakistan now for political consumption, especially after that mistake last week where that U.S. raid killed 20 women and children? And while, you know, behind the scenes, it's still, okay, go do what you have to do.
I think because of the raids killing civilians and the story of the women and the children was splashed, as you can imagine, in the Pakistani press and media, it has become very difficult for the military to even give a nod and a wink. I don't think that they are doing that. The politicians are, but I think that this has put real pressure on Kiani's leadership inside the military because he's under very heavy pressure from the ordinary soldiers and junior officers who go and fight in that region. And it's not well known, but thousands of Pakistani soldiers have died fighting the militants in that area.
And part of your book is about the strength of the military and the independence of the military from the civilian government. I mean, that's how Musharraf came to power in the first place. He was the head of the military and basically took over the civilian government. Now you have Zardari, Benazir Bhutto's widower, who's now the head of state. Could the army be doing this on its own, this new threat against the United States over Zardari's objections?
They could, technically. Nothing could stop them. And it would take a very strong president, which Zardari isn't, or a civilian political leader to tell the military, no, you can't defend the country. Were a political leader to say so, that allow the United States in, don't defend the country's territorial integrity, he or she wouldn't be in power for too long. So whatever Zardari may say in private to the United States, publicly it's the army that's calling the shots. I mean, it is interesting that this has happened and the chief of staff of the military is giving the press conference and making the statement and not the president of the country.
Bill in Queens, you're on WNYC with Tariq Ali. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Okay.
Thank you for this program. My question is, how does your guest square the idea that Mr. Obama threatened to invade Pakistan recently?
Right. That's the Obama position in the presidential race, and I was going to ask you about that, that the U.S. should be able to cross the border to get Taliban militants threatening Afghanistan or even more so al-Qaeda people, maybe even bin Laden himself if he's hiding out over there, if Pakistan refuses to do it itself.
Well, I think this was certainly Obama's position, and my own feeling at that time, I was very critical of him and still am, was that having said he was in favor of a withdrawal from Iraq, he had to act tough on another war just to show that he wasn't total namby-pamby when it came to military adventures abroad. I think it was determined by domestic political considerations, but now the situation is too serious to be a political football of any sort in the U.S. presidential race. And I sincerely hope that Barack Obama and McCain, for that matter, acquaint themselves with what the situation in Pakistan is, what that country is. This isn't a country where bearded jihadi terrorists are on the verge of seizing the nuclear weapons. That's a grotesque misrepresentation more suited to a science fiction Hollywood movie. It is not the case. The Pakistani military is 500,000 strong. No one can attack the nuclear facilities, leave alone take it, unless the military wants it to. And that's a crucial question, and it clearly doesn't.
From where you sit, how different do you see McCain or Obama being with respect to policy toward Pakistan, Afghanistan?
At the moment, there's no big difference between them. I mean, when Barack Obama first raised it, as you mentioned earlier, he was criticized by Hillary Clinton, saying he's naive. But this naivety is Republican policy now. And so I don't see any big difference between Obama and McCain on Afghanistan, and I think that this is a tragedy.
Adam in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Mr. Ali, what will be the reaction of Pakistan if India decides to take action against Kashmiri separatists, which committed bombings inside India?
Well, Kashmir is technically, a large bulk of it is part of India, and the Indian army already occupies the province. So what more actions it can take, I don't know. And recently, you had in Kashmir itself the largest nonviolent civil disobedience movement against the Indian government since 1948. The group which carried out the bombings in Delhi, I think most Kashmiris would be extremely hostile to that. It doesn't help their cause.
Adam, thank you. And of course, the other thing that I didn't mention that was prominent in the headlines this morning regarding Pakistan is that Pakistan was very upset that the Australian cricket team has decided to tour India.
Well, naturally, because, you know, they couldn't tour Pakistan because they said bombs went off in Pakistan. So that the players said they couldn't play. But bombs are going off in India, and the Australian cricketers are going there. And the real fact is that Indian cricket is awash with money. And they have this special league which they've created, which pays the top world-class cricketers phenomenal amounts of money, $1 million per season. And so the Australian cricketers can't afford to upset the Indians. Pakistan doesn't matter.
I didn't expect such a substantive answer. Ron in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Tariq Ali. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if the new president, you know, when new situations happen in countries, they kind of shut down old policies. I was wondering if the new president is just holding out for some sort of favor, like a trade favor or maybe military jets, or I don't know what he wants, but anything, and then he would change his mind, and then the U.S. raids would continue. In Pakistan, this might be a political.
So it's a bargaining chip.
Yes,
I don't think so. I think he's a very weak president. I don't think he's got too much to offer the United States. He's been put in power through factional maneuvers in Washington. He is notorious in Pakistan as the most corrupt politician ever, who made a lot of money when his wife was prime minister. There are cases against him in Geneva, which makes him a weak figure, a creature who could easily be manipulated.
Avais in Tinton Falls, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make my comments on that same issue, which is very important.
The cricket?
Not the cricket also, but before
I'm
that, American army can go inside Pakistan and do the operation there. But I think everybody, American and Pakistan even more, want to end this terrorism, no question about that. But I think this American action will not help fighting this terrorism. And I think Pakistan army should take care of the business there.
Thank you very much, Avais. But by the way, did you say something to our screener about perceptions of Obama and McCain among your friends in the Pakistani community?
Yes, I did. Actually, in the beginning, I was for Obama when he started his campaign. But after that, when I saw his repeated comments about the Pakistan, I do not agree him with that at all. And most of the Pakistani I know that also do not agree with his statements about Pakistan and his policy against Pakistan. So that's why.
So you feel you have nobody to vote for, or are you now leaning McCain?
I will vote for McCain.
Thank you very much. We're almost out of time, but the other side of the argument is, you know, not just why the United States is crossing the border, but why isn't Pakistan doing this itself?
Well, Pakistan, to be fair to it, has tried to engage in actions. They've killed people, and also they've killed innocents as well. They've lost their own soldiers. But it's very difficult for an army to shoot its own people. And that creates big problems inside the army itself. And the real question is that the war in Afghanistan is going badly wrong, and the U.S. is trying to shift the blame to Pakistan instead of understanding that the NATO occupation has inherent problems of its own which can't be sorted out.
Of Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan, yeah.
That's another whole can of worms for another day. Just tell us the meaning of the title, The Duel.
Well, the duel is essentially, in my eyes, a duel between the majority of people in Pakistan who want a better life and the political military elites who've repressed them and exploited them, in most cases backed by the United States. The book is essentially about the Pakistan-American relationship and how it's distorted Pakistani politics for 50 years.
The Duel, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power. Published by Scribner, by Tariq Ali. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Diane Brady from Business Week coming up next to talk about AIG, the insurance giant that may be on the brink of failure even after the bailout that Governor Patterson approved yesterday. Stay with us.